Hello, I'm Kirsty Young, and this is a podcast from the Desert Island Discs archive. For rights reasons, we've had to shorten the music. The programme was originally broadcast in 1988, and the presenter was Sue Lawley.
My castaway this week is a man who enjoys the good things of life, whether he's polishing his vintage car, jogging through Hyde Park, or preparing something wonderful in the kitchen. He is a perfectionist. His business is food, food that is not only delicious, but healthy as well. His dedication to it has taken him from a modest background in a Swiss village to being master of the kitchens in one of London's greatest hotels. He is now recognised as one of the great chefs of the world. He is Anton Mosiman. Monsieur Mosiman, do you ever feel you just can't face cooking another meal?
Not at all. I'm looking forward for the next one all the time. I just love it and enjoy every minute of it.
So, on our desert island, is this going to be a great challenge or a great joy to you to have all these raw materials, all these plants and wild animals, we hope, to choose from, to put in your pot?
I can't wait for it. Must be wonderful, honestly. One of the greatest challenges in life is to go anywhere in the world, go to the markets, supermarkets, whatever, and just buy local ingredients and create something with it. So I can't wait to get there.
Let's have your first record.
I like very much Rossini's Wilhelm Tell, conducted by Herbert von Karajan. Just a little story. So whenever Herbert von Karajan came to Lucerne every summer for the musical week, he loved calf's head. One of his favorite dish was calf's head. And the chef then, a man called Otto Schlegel, a wonderful personality. Whenever he came back from the winter season to Lucerne, his first trip was to the butcher shop and ordered the calf's head for August when Karajan was arriving. It was such a big fuss. The whole kitchen was nervous for weeks and waiting, looking forward for the calf's head to arrive. I always remember those moments of Karajan then coming actually down to the kitchens and said, you know, thank you very much. I really enjoyed my calf's head today.
Rossini's Wilhelm Tell Overture, played by the Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Herbert von Karajan. Well, now, Anton Mosiman, you're a fourth-generation chef. Did you always know you wanted to cook for a living?
Yes, always. I remember I was 6 years of age, standing in the kitchen with father and mother, helping, washing up, cleaning the kitchen, cleaning the pots. And I just knew then I'm going to be a chef one day.
Do you remember the first thing you cooked by yourself?
Yes, I did. It was actually spaghetti bolognese. And soon after, a cheese fondue. And for friends, in fact, for grown-up friends.
How old were you then?
I was then 8 years of age.
And this was in your parents' restaurant in Switzerland?
Yes, it was. And every Monday, our restaurant was closed for the public. And a couple of friends came in and had a good clean-out in the restaurant. And afterwards, I served them a meal. In fact, my parents were not there. They were somewhere shopping or whatever. And I just felt I must give those people something to eat and ended up with spaghetti bolognese or, as I said, a cheese fondue.
What sort of restaurant was it?
It was a basic restaurant, a bourgeois cuisine restaurant. Very simple, but very honest and very straightforward. People came in with their overalls just for a good plate of something to eat.
And this was your home as well? I mean, you lived in the restaurant.
Yes, in fact, my school, my homework was always done in the restaurant. There was no living room. There was no family room at all. All it happened was actually in the restaurant. So my growing up, my experience as a small child, I remember from the restaurant.
But unlike in your father and your grandfathers before you, in you was a desire not just to cook, but to cook in a big way, a grand way. You always knew that, did you? That you were going to make it big?
Always. I had always dreams and somehow self-discipline to be just an inch ahead of most of my colleagues. And I knew one day I wanted to be a chef in a large hotel with many, many cooks around me, cooking for very different tastes and for well-known people. I knew that then.
Well, now, was that born of simply a love of good cuisine, or of a desire for recognition, or of a desire for wealth?
I'm not quite sure which one. I was the only child, and somehow not spoiled like most, but I had to work very hard. And I got used to it as a very young boy. So somehow I wanted to be recognized, yes. Money I always liked too, but it wasn't actually number one. Number one was to produce something and give pleasure to other people.
Let's have your second record.
It's the Golden Gate Quartet. A nice memory when I was working at the Palace Hotel in Villar. I was only 17 years of age. And one evening I was on night duty and remember very well when I was able to actually push the curtains back and looking at those wonderful musicians. I really fell in love with jazz music then. And I would love to hear it again.
I'm going to lay down my burden down by the river side. Down by the river side. Down by the river side. I'm going to lay down my burden down by the river side. Just let me be born.
The Golden Gate Quartet with Down by the Riverside. So, Anton, you went off, you left Switzerland when you were about 19 in your white sports car to work in the kitchens of Rome. You must have cut quite a dash.
Wonderful experience. Worked very hard, but had a wonderful time. But also I learned a lot about Italian food and the mentality of people. I always like to get to know the people, not only work with them, but live with them. And what better if you actually can live in a place like Rome?
Now, you look, if I may say so, extremely healthy and fit. I mean, one expects great chefs to be large, rotund people, and you are not that at all. You were always keen on fitness, though, even as a young man, and still are, yes?
Very much so. In fact, I was, I'm sure you're going to laugh now, so, but I was a wrestler when I was 15 years of age. In fact, I was the Swiss champion for 2 years running. It doesn't look like now, but it learned me to be disciplined. It learned me to be, again, a winner. And I must be honest, I like to be a winner.
There's a competitive edge to you, isn't there? It's very
there is,
strong.
There is. Always has been and still is now somehow, but in a nice way. in a very nice way. I don't like to win, unfair. I like to put myself here and say, hey, let's go and let's do something.
You're a perfectionist.
Oh, very much so. I mean, every day I wake up and say, what can I do better today than yesterday? Where can I improve constantly? I think once you're used to a life of, hopefully, perfection, you can't live any other ways. I mean, it's the only way for me, and I just love it. I adore it.
Now, when you wake up, the first thing you do quite often, most mornings, is jog off around Hyde Park as part of this fitness fanaticism of yours. What do you think about as you jog?
A lot. It's actually amazing how clear your mind is early in the morning, because you feel a bit hungry in the morning. And as hungrier you feel, as more you think about food, and quite often I create amazing dishes during my jogging time.
It's a wonderful image. Let me ask you for your third record.
It's actually something which, as you know, my fish book just been published a few weeks ago, Anton's Cuisine on Fish, and I would very much like to hear something from the Trout Quintet.
Part of Schubert's Trout Quintet, played by Alfred Brendel and members of the Cleveland Quartet. Well, now, your list of awards is phenomenal. You were the youngest ever master chef in Switzerland. You've been chef of the year here, gold medals, too numerous to mention. You can't, of course, learn how to achieve all of that. There has to be something beyond it. What is it?
I think it's a gift. When I train chefs, there's only so much you can give them. So much you can tell them, so much you can show them. But the rest, they have to know, they have to feel themselves. And I believe it's a gift from God you have to have.
But can you describe what it is when you say it's a gift from God? What is it? What form does it take in you?
You look at something and you say, oh, that's cooked or not cooked. Because you feel the texture, even if you don't necessarily touch it, but you can look at it. If you can feel it, even better. I mean, I almost cry sometimes when a chef touches a melon and, you know, with no feelings. I mean, the melon you touch like a little baby. You take it to your mouth and to your nose and you smell it and say, lovely melon. Yes, it's ripe. You can use it. And other people just take it like, you know, it's heartbreaking. So there's a certain feel, a certain gift.
It also, of course, has a lot to do with presentation, doesn't it? That you have to have that kind of, beyond the instinct you describe, you have to have a certain flair for what goes with what and what it will look like together and what it will look like on the plate.
That's right. You have to have the colour concept quite right. On the other hand, you also need the tastes. It's not good just playing with colours. The tastes have to match as well. I remember only a few months ago I was served a beautiful poached fish with a lovely white wine sauce. And in desperation, the chef was looking for colours. And a strawberry ended up on my fish. How sad. There's so many other things you could have used.
What about the temperament of great chefs? Again, the popular image is that he marches around his kitchen shouting at everybody and pulling everybody into line like a great major general.
I think, again, so that has changed. That image of the chefs throwing knives and casseroles through the kitchen is dead. luckily. I mean, I used to work with chefs who were really temperamental, and all they knew was shouting and screaming at you and using their big knives and this sort of thing. I don't believe in it. I believe in being a gentleman in the kitchen, explain your chefs, talk to them, and work as a team. I had 85 chefs at the Dorchester when I left, 650 on the waiting list. People from all over the world who wanted to come and work with me.
Well, now, Anton, very important question this. Why is it that women are cooks and men are chefs?
So I think that's changing too, actually. In fact, I had one or two very good chefs at the Dorchester, ladies, who were extremely creative, dedicated to their jobs, and very good what they've done. So I think in years to come, we have more women chefs than we have now. There's no reason why a woman shouldn't be a head chef in a large hotel.
Your fourth record, if you will.
It's something from Shirley Bassey. I remember Shirley Bassey came once to the kitchens at the Dorchester. In fact, she joined us for a meal downstairs in my dining room. Wonderful time we had together. And at 1 o'clock in the morning, she started to sing. I will never forget that experience. In fact, many, many of my chefs stayed on till 1 o'clock in the morning to hear Shirley singing.
Diamonds are forever, sparkling around my little finger. Unlike men, the diamonds linger.
Shirley Bassey singing Diamonds Are Forever. Anton, you became maître chef de cuisine at the Dorchester in London when you were only 28. Was that the fulfilment of a dream?
I think it was. I remember I took over 132 chefs with 28 years of age. Most of them were actually older than I was. And the first day, one of my assistants came to me and said, "You know, sir, my son is just 1 year older than you are." I got the message. And so often, in fact, I got almost tired of it. People said, "But we've done it for this or that way for the last 40 years, 25 years. Why you now want to change it?" And I didn't give up. In fact, I never give up in life. I want to be a winner. And after 13 years, I knew I won.
But also perhaps a lot of people couldn't understand why someone who had such great ambitions in the realms of cuisine should want to come and practice it here in Britain. We're not exactly noted for our cuisine.
Now I think he has changed, in all fairness. I think there's no reason why today you can't eat as good here in Britain than anywhere else in the world, because all the ingredients are here, and the chefs are here too now.
You went, of course, a few years ago to cook for a family in Sheffield, didn't you, to prove that they could eat well on a limited budget. What did you cook for them?
It was such a wonderful experience. As you know, we went to the market and were looking around what was best on that day, and came back with bags full of wonderful ingredients like fresh chicken, mushrooms, peppers, tomatoes, potatoes, and ended up with a fricassee of chicken, fresh cabbage, cooked for 5 minutes and not for 2 hours. So we actually could taste and smell and enjoy good cabbage. Then our famous bread and butter pudding, which again, it went down very well.
You turned it into a souffle.
Almost. It's almost a slight like a souffle. It's still a bread and butter pudding, I promise you so. But it's you eat it almost like a souffle, it's so light. That, of course, makes a lot of difference.
Another record, Anton.
It's from Barbara Dixon. I love to hear Barbara sing in memory. It's also from Cats, who's my favourite musical. In fact, I saw it 4 times. I'd love to see it again.
leaves collect at my feet, and the wind begins to moan.
Barbara Dixon singing Memory from the musical Cats. Of course, one of the great influences on cooking over the past decade has been the development of cuisine minceur, a criticism, if you like, of the richness and the creaminess of classical French cuisine. But you didn't totally approve of cuisine minceur, did you?
Not quite. I think cuisine minceur was a good idea for slimming, but it used cream, butter and oil. I then thought there must be another way of actually cooking without those ingredients, completely leave them out. And that's why I created Cuisine Naturelle, a style of cooking without cream, without butter, without oil.
But surely you need to use some of those things. I mean, if you're going to fry an onion, or soften an onion even, you need a little bit of butter or oil in the pan.
Not necessary. You can use it in a, you can use a non-stick pan, or you can soften your onions in a little bit of liquid stocks or plain water.
Doesn't that make them quite sort of squidgy, flabby?
Not necessary. You just have to be very, very careful. But the results actually are better, more honest, and proper taste.
But how do you eat vegetables without a little bit of butter on them, to, even if it's just to make them glisten?
You don't have to. You can actually steam them. You can poach them. You poach them in vegetable stock, and you really taste and enjoy wonderful vegetables.
What do you say to a man with a big appetite who, in front of whom you put this delicately arranged piece of cuisine naturelle, and he says, well, that's terrific, it tastes very nice, when's the main course coming?
You just serve him one or two more courses. I think it's possible.
And look superior.
Of course. or you make the portions a bit larger. You always have to adjust your menus according to your guests. But there's no reason why even somebody who likes lots of food and good food can enjoy cuisine naturelle.
We eat far less meat than we used to, I think, don't we?
Very much so. Fish is in, so is poultry and vegetables.
And big juicy steaks are out?
They're out in a daily on a daily menu, let's say. They're still in, obviously, once a week, maybe twice a week. But most people tend to eat much more fish and poultry than 5-6 years ago.
Well, you're going to have a wonderful time on the island because there are going to be lots of fish if you can catch them. And if you can manage to rub two sticks together, then you'll be able to steam them and poach them to your heart's content. Will you be attempting to escape, Anton?
I think so. I think after a few days, I would like to go back to my friends and cook for them again. I mean, I'm looking forward to be on the island and you know, be by myself and create wonderful dishes just for myself. But then there comes a time where you like to share your ideas and your food with somebody else.
And get back into the competition.
Exactly.
Your next record, please.
It's something by Sir George Scholte. Again, I was asked by Lady Scholte to cook his 75th birthday at his home. He didn't know. I came in late afternoon with four of my chefs and was almost smuggled into the house, and we cooked a meal for 100 people. And just before the guests sat down, Lady Scholte came in the kitchen with Sir George and said, "Here, darling, Anton Mosimann and his team." And he just couldn't believe it. And for me, it was such a wonderful moment to meet the great maestro. A moment I should never forget.
Thank you.
Sir George Scholte conducting the Chicago Symphony Orchestra in the overture to Rossini's Barber of Seville. Now, you had, Anton, as you've mentioned, this private dining room off the kitchens in the Dorchester. You said Shirley Bassey came in there and sang to you at 1 o'clock in the morning. It was invitation only. Who else did you invite in there?
Quite a few, actually, and a colourful mix of people. In fact, Danny Kaye was one of my greatest and best friends. Danny would never go up to his hotel room. He would always come down to the kitchen first, and we would have a cup of coffee, and we would just talk about food for hours and hours. But Peter Ustinov, Michael Caine, people from the film business, but also from the politics, like we have President Reagan down there one day,
really?
Which was lovely. You know, just to actually mix with...
It's a great leveller, food, isn't it? Everybody wants to talk about it and everybody feels equal to talking about it.
I think so, and everybody has to eat. And most people actually are interested in food. There's always a conversation going somehow, their likes or their dislikes, good experiences, bad experiences.
Now, it's an open secret, too, that you've cooked private dinners for members of the royal family. I mean, are we allowed to ask which members?
I think most members. Only recently I was asked to cook a series of meals, and most of the royal family members actually were there. So, yes, most of them.
You're very discreet. Have you ever had a great culinary disaster that you can admit to?
I think a few, but one I remember which was really very difficult to rectify. We had a banquet for 500 people and they all had a soup in a cup covered with puff pastry. And somehow all the soups collapsed. All the puff pastry fell into the soup. And when I found out, it was obviously quite late, I ran upstairs into the ballroom and asked the manager, the banquet manager, to hold the people back. Give me another drink, please. But it was too late. They already walked into the room and sat down. And we had to go down and find a solution. In fact, we had to cover the soup with new puff pastries. We had to let the people wait, obviously, for about 10 minutes. But sometimes it's better to let people wait for 10 minutes than serving something which you're not quite happy with. They're obviously disasters you can't avoid. If it happens, it happens. But then the most important thing is to keep your nerves. I never show that I'm nervous, especially under those circumstances. It's very important that you keep calm. Then if you as a chef start running around doing things badly or unconscious, then you know your staff follows. So it's very important that you keep calm.
Your seventh record.
It's Louis Armstrong, whom I met in Montreal in 1967 when I was working at the Canadian Pavilion as a chef. A wonderful man. I was able to listen to his music then. And a few years later, he came to St. Moritz, to the Palace Hotel, where again he played wonderful music and met him again then. In fact, he signed one of his records for me. So I'd love to hear him again.
Louis Armstrong and the All-Stars with Backertown Blues. Anton Mosman, if you had to eat your last supper, on our desert island, what would it be? Can you describe it to me in all its glory? Let us say that you have all the ingredients and the wherewithal to cook it.
I think it would certainly be a steamed fish, steamed with Chinese parsley, maybe a bit of soya, and just simple steamed. Bottle of champagne, and that would be my last supper.
No pudding, no cheese?
Not necessary. I think I could just fulfill my needs with a beautiful dish. I can smell it now already. If I find and would have some ginger, I also would add some ginger too.
And now, Anton, after 13 years at the Dorchester, you've quit, you've left. You've left it all behind you. That must have been a very difficult decision.
It was indeed. Sad moment in my life. On the other hand, life is not a trip in itself. It's not a goal. It's a progress. And you get there step by step. And I had happy years there. Very successful years. But there's a time where you have to make a decision. And I needed a new challenge. That's why I resigned. And I have now a business of my own, a private club, private dining club. In fact, the word club is maybe not quite right. It should be a restaurant, private restaurant, where I can entertain guests, stroke friends. The advantage of having a private club is you get to know your members and they become friends. And I want to know their likes and dislikes in much more detail than I would ever have been able to find out at the Dorchester.
The disadvantage is, by running a private dining club or private restaurant, is that you cannot qualify for stars in the Michelin. Now, you won 2 stars for the terrace restaurant in the Dorchester. Now you will be starless.
Yes, you're right. I will be starless. On the other hand, I done it. I achieved 2 stars. And it was nice to get up every morning and fighting for 2 stars.
Nothing left to prove now.
There's still a lot to be proved.
Who are you going to compete against?
Against myself, in many ways, because I don't need to prove it towards the Michelin guides or Good Food Guide or whatever, Ignoni guides. I just want to prove it to my guests that I can do it. And I want to keep them happy as I can.
Let's have your final record.
It's something from ABBA. Again, it reminds me very much of my time in Sweden, where I was working as a trainee, moneyless, walking around those wonderful streets of Stockholm, with no money in my pocket, but full of dreams. And how wonderful now, after so many years, those dreams have come true.
ABBA with Super Trooper. Now, the final moments, Anton Mosiman, before you depart these shores for the sunny but deserted climes of our desert island. Now, which one of those records above all others will you hold most dear while you're there?
I think it will be Memory from Barbara Dixon. I think it will bring back so many memories of my youth when I was sitting next to the lake of my hometown, dreaming out my future, looking forward, couldn't wait to get older, one day to be in charge of something, to be successful.
And what book would you like to have with you as you sit and dream? You have, as you know, the complete works of Shakespeare and you have the Bible.
I think next to those wonderful books you just mentioned, there's one book I like to study much more in details, and that's Bartolomeo Scappi, who used to be the chef to the Pope in 1525. He wrote the first cookery book, with wonderful recipes. And I love to go back, page by page, and just study it more in details.
And don't tell me your luxury is a fish slice.
No, it's a steamer. I love to have a steamer, because I cannot live without a steamer. And even on this beautiful island here, I think a steamer I need to survive.
Anton Moserman, thank you very much indeed for letting us hear your Desert Island Discs.
You've been listening to a podcast from the Desert Island Discs archive. For more podcasts, please visit bbc.co.uk/radio4.